Psalm chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, to the choir master with stringed instruments, a psalm of David. Answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You have given me relief when I was in distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. O men, how long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? But know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. There are many who say, who will show us some good? Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. In peace I will both lie down and sleep, for you will alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. I don't think David was having a good day again. It seems like that happens in quite a few psalms that David writes, but this one, it seems as though he was again in just having a difficult time. Some people actually tie this psalm with Psalm 3, and they say that they maybe went together, but there's not a lot of proof of that. The main evidence that people find is the fact that verse 5 of chapter 3 and verse 8 of chapter 4 seem to kind of have some similar ideas with the laying down to sleep and the sustaining of the Lord. But, I mean, I don't know if that necessarily means that these two psalms had to talk about a similar time. Yeah, I think it's basically just speculation and circumstantial evidence that people point to tie them together. And David doesn't give us a lot of instruction himself when he wrote this, just who he wrote, you know, to the choir master with the stringed instruments, a psalm of David. He tells us that he wrote it, and that's about it. He doesn't tell us the circumstances. But it appears as though it wasn't a good day. You notice some of the things that he says. You've given me relief when I was in distress. He asks these questions in verse 2. How long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? I think you see this even in verse 8. You know, the fact that in peace I will lie down and sleep, for you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety. There seems to be this this emphasis on the difficulty that David was facing. Maybe the reason why it sounds similar to Psalm 3 is because when David wrote this, he just thought of the situation in Psalm 3, and the situation he was in when he wrote this made him think of that day when he was chased out of Jerusalem by Absalom and was mocked by Shimei as he fled to the Jordan River. But you can't help but note where David turns in this difficult day of his life. And it seems to be where David ends up turning, regardless of the difficulty of the day. It probably should be the place where we turn when we face the difficult days. And that is to his God. He starts off right away in verse 1, answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. See, God was somebody that he could depend on. God was somebody that he could trust because he was the God of his righteousness. You see, David understood that his righteousness didn't come from himself, that he wasn't somebody who could make himself righteous. He wasn't a particularly good person. He recognized that his righteousness had to come from his God, and that God was willing to help him and was able to help him. And so he calls to the God of his righteousness, God, if you are able to declare a sinner like me righteous, then you are the one that can help me in my distress. I'm sure that this problem that I'm facing really kind of pales in comparison to the problem of my sin, which is the bigger problem that all of us have to deal with. You see, David wasn't one to focus completely on the problem, although he did at times focus on the problem. You can't really miss that in the Psalms. There's times where he seems distressed, he seems stressed out, he voices the feelings of discouragement well for us at times. I think of Psalm 55 when he says in verse 6, oh, that I had wings like a dove, for then would I fly away and be at rest. And he felt as though if he could just have wings and he could fly away from all the problems of life. But you know, he always ends up coming back to the God of his righteousness by the end of his Psalms. if not at the beginning. And this is where he turns at the very beginning of this psalm. He turns directly to the God of his righteousness to save him in the midst of his distress. I think when we face difficulties in our lives, we face difficult days, we have them. I mean, everybody has a bad day periodically. Some are worse than others. And again, I don't want to compare the problems of your life to David's or your problems to my problems, because that's really irrelevant. No matter what your life is, no matter where your life is at, you have problems. You will have days where you will want to quit, or you'll be discouraged, and you'll face difficulties. And I think that when we turn to our pride and our selfishness, we draw our attention away from God. But that's the natural thing for us to do. The natural thing for us to do is to think it's all about us, pride. And to whine and complain about the problems, our selfishness. And we miss God in all of it. We miss the fact that God is God, and we miss who he is. But I think that what David does here is he trusts the righteous character of God in his distress. I think you can see that as he calls on God in verse 1. Verse 5 says, he commands those who are reading this to put your trust in the Lord. He finds his joy in God. And he doesn't focus on the problem as much as he focuses on his God. And I think that is what we must do as we face difficulties. This is how we find that God is a relief when we are in distress, is when we see his mighty character in spite of the problems, in spite of the difficulties. And I think that the entire structure of this psalm kind of reveals this, and I don't know how else to do this other than to just to explain it. There are these two questions here that he asks in verse 2 and verse 6, but they're not really even directed at the same people. And that might be a way of working out the structure of this particular psalm. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem to be a nice poetic outline or structure to the way that it's laid out. There are some repeated concepts and some things that I think maybe are plays on words. When he says, be gracious to me and hear my prayer, he asks God to hear him in verse 1, and in verse 3 he says with confidence, the Lord hears when I call to him. He says to put your trust in the Lord, and then says that I will lie down and sleep, and the Lord makes me dwell in safety. But I just, again, didn't feel like it fit into a nice little outline. And so I just want to talk about how David responds and how he sees the character of God and the things of God that maybe are evidence here. He starts off after begging God to hear him and answer him by asking this question, apparently of those who were against him. O men, how long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? He felt as though he was under attack. And he felt as though this wasn't consistent with what God had said about him, with what he knew about the truth of God. Apparently, obviously David is the king, and so his honor here, how long will my honor be turned into shame? They were twisting the honor that was due him as king, as the king of God's people, even. And twisting that to shame. And they were pursuing, they were loving vain words, empty words. Words that didn't mean anything. Words that were pointless. And they were seeking after lies. It seems as though that perhaps these were insults. These vain words that were uttered at him were insults. And that they were pursuing things that were being spread, maybe rumors about the king, things that were untrue of him. But notice how he responds to this. This is the answer, really, almost, to the question in verse 3. But know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. So it's really not about David's honor. It's really not about the insults and the lies. But it's about God. The Lord has set apart the godly for himself. It doesn't matter what anyone can say about the godly. And let us note who the godly are. These aren't the people that keep all the rules necessarily. This isn't the people who toe the party line and who look right every Sunday morning. And you know the ones that you would pick out as most likely to succeed necessarily. No. That's not what the godly people are. Godly people are people who recognize their own sinfulness and turn from it to the righteousness of Jesus Christ. That's what, again, he emphasized the God of my righteousness in verse 1 is who he's talking to and who he's talking about. If he's talking about the God of his righteousness, then we must recognize that the godliness that David was falling back on here was not something of David's own doing, but of God's doing. We all recognize that we mess things up and that we sin. We have broken the law of God. And we stand before him in our own righteousness that are deemed by him to be filthy rags. And it earns no favor with God. You can't be good enough to earn favor with God. You have no right to stand before God. And so you must recognize that the only way you can be godly is not if you try really hard. It's not if you made a New Year's resolution to read your Bible through in a year or to pray for a half an hour every day or whatever your New Year's resolution is. That isn't what's going to make you godly. It is a work of God that makes us godly, and God must set us apart for himself. And we know that the Lord sets apart the godly for himself. That is, so it doesn't matter what people say about us. It doesn't matter how they spin our honor into shame, how they pursue and love empty words and insults and lies about us. When God declares a person righteous, that righteousness is there. And God will set apart the godly for himself. He determines the words that apply to the godly. He determines the honor that is due the godly. Because it is a work that he must do. And they are his people that he has purchased for himself. He also mentions that the Lord hears when I call to him. So even though these people don't seem to be listening, they don't seem to hear, God hears. And I think the response to this then that he explains in verses 4 and 5 is important. If indeed the Lord has set apart the godly for himself, and that's the answer to honor being twisted into shame and empty words and lies being hurled at the people of God, then there's no need to be angry. He says, be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent. Offer right sacrifices. Put your trust in God. He allows for anger, but not the sinful kind. And this is pulled out by Paul in Ephesians chapter 4, in verse 26, where he says, "Be angry and don't sin. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath." Right? And the whole concept, if you look at Ephesians chapter 4, and I think Paul helps us out in understanding the emphasis that David is making here in this verse, I think the whole the whole context surrounding that verse in Ephesians is emphasizing the staying away from bitterness and the refusal to get revenge. Yeah, there's forgiveness. Just a few verses down in Ephesians 4:32, you see evidence of the fact that what we ought to do is not stew in our anger and get angry at people and frustrated and bitter because they're mean to us, because they're twisting our honor into shame or hurling empty words at us and lies and insults at us. But instead, to just be silent, and you know, it appears as though this, whatever this anger is, and I don't like the concept of righteous anger because I don't really know what that looks like. I don't feel like I ever have it. But apparently there is an anger that is acceptable, or an agitation at least, which is what the footnote in the ESV allows for this word. But nonetheless, we don't respond with bitterness and revenge and trying to pursue that. That's not the way. We kind of let God handle it. And we're silent. In verse 5, we're to offer right sacrifices and put our trust in the Lord. It's just not about religious ceremony and about doing things, but just obedience and trust. Trusting and obeying God is what he would have us to do in response to this. And so he brings us to verse 6, which he says, he asks this a second question, then there are many who say, who will show us some good? Is there any good out there? And then again, we see David's answer, and it doesn't seem like the way you would answer a question. Just like in verse 3, it doesn't necessarily seem like the way that you would necessarily answer the questions even that he asks there. But I think the answer, I think he's getting to the answer when he says, lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. He doesn't even answer it really with a statement to the questioner. He instead has a statement to God. Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. So what is this telling us? Well, if you want to see some good, the only place that you can turn is to God. That's the place to turn. Who will show us some good? Well, you need God to show you some good. That's the place where good will come from. And I think he emphasizes that in the verses that follow. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. In peace, I will both lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. See, when God lifts up his face upon us, we have joy, true joy. I think this is the blessedness of Psalm 1 that he's talking about here when he talks about the more joy in my heart. And then there's the safety, the dwelling in safety and confidence that we can have in our lives. And you'll notice that the joy that the person has when God's face shines upon you, when you have God's favor on you. And again, this is, I think, a reference to the righteousness of God applied to our accounts in spite of our sinfulness because of the blood of Jesus Christ. That is the light of God's face shining upon us. That is the ultimate favor found in the gospel. And he says, you have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. Okay, so at harvest, when the party is at the peak, that, you know, that seems like a really, really good time for the world. And they're rejoicing in all of their worldly wealth and all of the things that they have provided and even thinking that they've provided for themselves. Now, I think that maybe the closest thing we could think about in this regard is Thanksgiving, as that's our sort of harvest feast in America. And you think about the joy that goes along with that and how people look forward to that, those holidays. And I think we could maybe even apply it to any holiday. But when the things are abounding, all of the earthly possessions are abounding and people are rejoicing in those earthly possessions, and the favor of God and having His face shine upon us gives more joy than that. And I believe a more lasting joy. Something that's real and lasting that will change the way that we perceive grain and wine abounding. That maybe it would help us understand that having grain and wine abound isn't what it's all about. And then we can lie down in peace. In peace, I will both lie down and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. You see, there's safety and protection. There's confidence. You know, David comes to the end of this. And even though he's facing the fact that people are twisting words about him and lying about him and showing him all this disrespect, and he just says, I'm just gonna lay down and go to sleep. I don't really need everybody's approval. I don't really need everybody's support. I don't really need to worry about who I am in front of everyone else. I only need to worry about who I am before God. And I really feel like that's ultimately what it comes down to here. Who are you before God? Are you a godly person? Are you one of the people that God has declared righteous? That He has placed His righteousness upon you? You have taken of the righteousness of Jesus Christ and had it applied to your account. Are you one of these people? Have you experienced His face shining upon you so that you can experience the lasting and eternal joy that exceeds the joy that comes from just the empty things of the earth? Those things will never be enough. But the righteousness of God is enough. And then you can, that is why David could lie down in confidence, and then you would be able to lie down in confidence. You would be able to rest. And it wouldn't matter what anyone's saying about you. It wouldn't matter what the insults that are being hurled at you. It wouldn't matter how bad the day was, essentially. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, regardless of the circumstances that happened, who you are before God is the only thing that matters. Because that says something about your eternal destiny. It says something about what God is trying to do in you and through you. Because he's setting you apart for Himself. And He's giving you joy. And he's allowing you to dwell in safety. So you can just rest. And rest in who He is. So I think the application for us tonight is to be sure of our standing before God. Be sure of it. Do you know? Do you have confidence that the righteousness of Jesus Christ has been applied to your account? Or do you stand only in your own righteousness? Because I think ultimately then these vain words and lies aren't really vain words and lies, then they're ultimately true. Because you don't have any truth to stand on, then your righteousness is as filthy rags. You don't want to stand before God in your own righteousness. You don't have enough. You haven't done enough good. And only one bad thing is enough to send you to eternal punishment. And so you must pursue the righteousness of Jesus Christ. And that is how God's righteousness is applied to us, is through Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ came and lived that righteousness here on earth and sacrificed Himself, took our punishment on Himself, so that he could give us his righteousness. He takes the punishment away, gives us the righteousness so that we can stand before God. And he makes us godly. He gives us joy. And he offers us relief in our distress. And so if you are here tonight and you do not know that you stand before God in the righteousness of Jesus Christ, you must turn from your sin tonight and turn to Jesus and his righteousness. You need that. But if you have turned to Jesus and you have accepted his gift of righteousness, what is there in here for you? Well, let's just remember what he said about you again tonight. You're godly. That means you're godly. And that God has set you apart for himself. He's got a plan for you. He's got an agenda for you. He saved you for a reason. Have confidence in that. Some confidence in your God and what he says is true about you. Don't listen to the lies. Don't listen to the hate. Don't listen to the twisting. Recognize that what God says is that you are a godly person and he has a plan for you. He set you apart for himself, and find your joy in him. Find your joy in him. Because he has shined the light of his face upon you, and he has more joy to put into your heart than whatever you think might give you joy. You think something might give you joy, but it doesn't really compare to the joy that God wants to give you, that God has available. And he puts more joy in our hearts than they have, than everyone else has, when their grain and wine abound, when they're having the biggest party that you can possibly imagine. There's more joy in God than that. And you have security. You have security in your God. You can both lie down, so you can go home tonight and rest. So you can do that. Recognize what God has said about you and rest in what God has said about you. So that's my final point of application. Go home and rest well. If you are a Christian, if you stand in the righteousness of Jesus Christ, go home and sleep well. There's no reason why you shouldn't. Because what God says about you here is more true than all the other things that could keep you awake or could take your rest away.